Are we ready to go back there? All those are saying yes. Okay. Good evening and welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission for June 18th, 2014. May I have the roll call, please?
Bennett? Here.
Burt?
Tapler?
Here.
Peters?
Here.
Rafferty?
Here.
Stoltenberg?
Wendland?
Here. Okay. We had minutes from the last meeting. Do we have a motion on the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the minutes from the May 21st meeting as submitted.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of the meeting of, well, it says February 19th, but that's wrong, of the last month. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes for the last meeting are approved. So again, welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission meeting for June the 18th. We are a recommending body appointed by the City Council to review matters relative to plats and zonings and such matters. So we're glad you're here. If you have any comments relative to a given case, if you would go to the podium to my right and to your left back there at the appropriate time, I'll ask for comments from the audience and you can provide your name and interest in the particular case. So with that, Mr. Gregg, would we proceed?
Mr. Chairman, the first case before us tonight is a land use amendment request as well as a rezoning request. This is Devil's Glen Road right here, and this is Tanglewood Road. The property in question is outlined here in green, and it's two areas. One is R4, the other is A2. Petitioner is requesting that this go to a commercial land use and also that it go from R4 A2 to C3. So you can see on this aerial, the closest we have of any commercial type retail zoning is here with these lots that are all C2. Closest we have of commercial land use is here, and it's 900 feet from this parcel to the closest zoned area that is commercial. Pretty much everything around here, we have I-1 where we are at, out at the city annex and where the Pleasant Valley Maintenance Center is for the school district. This was all zoned at a prior time, and now this land use actually is a C, or is a office and research campus land use for this whole area. It is not an industrial, limited industrial type land use any longer. Traditional residential right here is a land use with R1 zoning. We have a PUD here with medium density, PUD, medium density land use throughout. So the types of land uses are, there's a variety of them in this area, but if you'll note that office transitional has a large portion of what is surrounding this whole area here with all these different parcels, and this is established pretty much as something that would go into that designation. This would be normally a C5 type zoning request. When staff reviewed this and the fact that there was no type of plan offered for this land at this time, we looked at that and said that we felt that that somewhat deviated from the normal course of action. Typically, you would get a plan, you would see what would go in this location before the rezoning request would come forward, especially for a zoning class of C3, because there is no C3 within 1,000 feet of this parcel. And that is a general business district with the most liberal of all the commercial designations. You have C3 further south here on Devil's Glen, but it is far removed from this site, and given that there is residential here, staff felt it could not make a recommendation for, but make a negative recommendation to not approve the land use request from office transitional to the commercial, and then also to make a negative recommendation against the rezoning from R4 A2 to C3. I'd ask if there are any questions.
Any questions on the part of the commission?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't recall in the 10 plus years that I've been on the commission, and maybe my memory is a little cloudy, that we've been asked to make a decision like this without a plan attached. Is there any kind of a precedent for that?
Mr. Beck and I talked that over in recent memory. There is no no memory of that happening. If I could just say one thing, if you remember the last C3 zonings south on this corridor were very highly restricted conditional zonings that limited to one type of use. So I don't know that we've even looked at a wide open C3 zoning in this Devil's Glen corridor.
So without any type of plan attached, there's no way for us to put those limitations in place?
I think that would be very helpful if there's a plan attached.
So I guess I would think of this, if I were someone who resided in that area, I wouldn't exactly be very excited about this coming in without any type of information for us to use to make a decision. It's a pretty wide open approval if we were to make it.
I had one question on the comments too, Greg. It says a revised, if there were recommended action, a revised LOMR is required prior to City Council approval. What is that?
I don't know if that might have been applicable to this case. I'm not sure.
And I guess just a question slash comment. When I looked at this, it appears to be what we call the classical spot zoning, where you take and you've got one particular zone with no other related zoning of that type around it, and typically would be not looked upon favorably. Is this an example of spot zoning?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, with generally you want to consider the character of the overall area and make sure that areas are consistent with one another. So spot zoning could occur where there's something that's clearly out of character with the surrounding areas. I don't know whether this in and of itself would equal that, but that's absolutely a concern to keep in mind.
Okay, and in that context, Christine, as I look at this and say, we've got industrial on one side, we've got office transitional around it, and residential PUD, medium density. Greg, you said I think it was 900 or 1,000 feet to the closest.
It's 900 feet to get to that.
Similar.
Not C3.
To C2, not to C3. Yeah. Okay. Any other comments or questions from the...
A couple questions. First of all, Greg, what kind of uses are we talking about for C3? What's allowed?
You could have a fuel oil dealer there. You could also have someone that sells wholesale type seed. You could have a... I mean, some type of, like a dairy could be there, types of food processing. You could also have... type of industrial cleaning there. You could also have a contractor's yard. So what you're doing is you're borderlining almost.
The office transitional is the C5?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's what this is all zoned here.
So that is a commercial district, but it's just a lighter use than what they're asking for. All right. Thank you.
Anyone else from the commission? Seeing none, I would open it up to the audience. Anyone in the audience that would like to present or comment with regard to this case? Okay, seeing none, I would come back to the commission.
Wait.
Oh, sorry. Yep, go ahead, sir.
All righty. My name is Steve Loxton. I'm the actual real estate agent who has this property listed. And our understanding for the C3 was just supposed to be general commercial. We've had several people interested in the property, but with the agricultural and the residential zoning that it is right now, they haven't really been interested. They said if it was zoned commercial, that then they would be more willing to put something on paper and to get this property sold so they can, you know, just create more development for the city in that area. But yeah, it was our understanding that the C3 Was it supposed to be like general, just kind of like what's down the street, like the 900 yards, he said, or the 900 feet, you know, just small retail? We haven't had anything for like gas stations or anything like that, but more for the retail that's just right down the street.
Okay. What I might suggest then, it's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem, but if you've got someone who's interested, that would be a time to approach the city with a development plan, purchase options subject to changing the zoning. And if your intent is to not have something as intent as a C3, it would be a more appropriate to bring it back before the commission and the city to review it then.
Okay.
So okay. Would a good solution be, or a better solution be, to table this?
I think the only solution is to deny the zoning, in my opinion,
okay.
And let them come back with a plan and then the appropriate zoning that dovetails with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just as a point of discussion, in my opinion, I think it should stay C5 or something in that regard.
Right.
I don't think that we want to start moving the general commercial district further to the north.
No.
So,
great.
Depending upon what the use is, I think we should try to stay with the C5 and office transitional type of use. But that's for future consideration.
Yeah, and as I look at it, with the property owned by the city, I'm not anticipating that that really would change in the long run. The city's there for the duration. So I think that makes sense, Paul, to have something that transitions well and fits with the neighborhood. So that would be our comments back. Anyone else from the audience with regard to this case? Okay, seeing none, I would come back to the commission again.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion that we deny case number 14-046.
I'll second that.
We have to do these separately, don't we?
It's 4-6, the first one.
Yes.
Yeah, 4-6.
That's the land use amendment.
Land use. Okay. Do we have a second for that?
I'll second.
Oh, sorry, Paul. Okay. We have a motion and a second to deny case 14-006 per the staff's recommendation. All those in favor of denying, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is passed and the case is denied.
And do we also need would make a motion that we deny case 14-043. I don't know if there's no land use. I don't know if the rezoning, but that is before us, so I'll make that motion for denial.
And I'll second that also.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to deny case 14-043, subject to the staff's recommendation. All those in favor to deny the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign, motion is denied. Okay, thank you. Greg, sorry, go ahead.
Our second case, or I should say third case and fourth case involve a PR overlay district for an area up here of what has been traditionally known as the Fountains, and the PR overlay district is this area right here, and it really encompasses these lots right here of what is the plat of the Hopewell First Edition. The lots in red are the ones that effectively are going to be impacted by the decision of implementing the PR3 overlay district over what is now R3. Typically, these were going to be anticipated as duplexes. The developer now would like to make the lots here single family with structures that are similar to what was seen over in the villas of Ken Glevlin, third edition. This is the outline of the area, and this is a development plan that's accompanying the rezoning request. This is showing the contours and how these are set up basically as walkouts. And again, you'll have the same 12 lots with each of them having their single family designation. And you'll have I believe these, well, just easier just to circle the duplex lots. The others are essentially excluded as duplex, they're single family. The development plan may be brought forward at the same time as the zoning request under the PR overlay district designation. It's a little different process than what we normally see for something. Typically, it's similar to a PUD, but it's not quite. It's mainly a residential concern. Again, these are the units. These are the singles. Here you have two duplex structures. You have one duplex structure here. And again, these are all the singles that are being set up. The lot widths mainly, except with the exception of these two, are pretty much like 55 feet wide. There's one here that's about 51, and there's another one that is, I believe, 54. And the square footage, the lot widths, and the setbacks are what essentially are being accepted out in this request. And essentially, we have the PR overlay district, and then we have the regulations that govern it. This is the letter here indicating the intent of the developer on a schedule for developing the site, and that's part of the request that's required at this time. Staff in reviewing this took into consideration the recommendation that this body made regarding the Villas at Glen Gevlin third edition, and in that regard, staff would recommend approval of the PR overlay district as well as the development plan. I would ask you, are there any questions?
Questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to abstain on these three cases.
Okay. We have one abstention. Other questions from the commission?
Greg, just to clarify, if unchanged, these would be duplexes instead of single families. That's what's presently planned for this development.
If the proposal goes through, you're essentially stating that these are detached and that they're permitted on a lot that is not as wide as what would be required under R3, a lot with fewer square feet, and also that the side yards on these will be each 5 feet in separation, so you have a total of 10 feet separating these units.
So they'd still be single families.
Yes, these will be single family here.
Okay.
That one and these three.
So essentially what we're changing with this is just the setbacks and the side yards and things of that nature.
Yes, and under the ordinance, typically he would have been allowed to have had 10 single family units. What we did is we looked at total square footage of the 12 lots involved. Mm-hmm. Typically, when we divided that by the 8,400 square feet required per each lot, we get 10 units. But under the ordinance, he's allowed to have up to 15% more in terms of units allowed on the site. So that's why there are 12 permitted here.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
So I can rephrase here. If the PR overlay is not approved, then single-family homes would not be allowed on these lots because they would not meet the...
Say that again, Bill, with the noise behind it in here. They would not?
They would not.
But I'm thinking there's already a single-family house on lot 30.
There is.
So that given... So tell me again, with one already there, how they would not be...
If you recall, when we had some permits issued in the past, and there were some setback requirements that were not met, lot
right.
sizes. This was one. In talking to the developer, he will either replat that lot 30 to meet the minimum requirement before we issue a C of O, or if this PR overlay is approved, then it's okay.
Then it's compliant. Okay.
So the house is not completed until we issue the C of O.
Gotcha.
That will not be issued until this is done. But the as it sits now, if the PR3 is not approved, they could do duplexes as it sits now on the rest of the lots, or they could come in and replat to make the lots meet the subdivision requirements and build single families on them. So they have some options.
Okay. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
If we don't approve and it reverts back to the duplexes, how many units, not lots, but units would there be compared to what this option is giving us? Would there be more or less?
Well, there could be more. Obviously, if you remember, in the zoning district, they can build duplexes on a 45-foot lot.
Right.
So my guess is, and I don't want to speak to the developer, to maximize the number of units he could get, he'd probably come in and replat to 45-foot lots.
Okay.
If I'm speaking wrong to the developer, please let me know.
Any other questions or comments from the commission? I've got a couple. Let me get down to it, sorry. One of the issues, and it's noted, you mentioned the grading in the footnotes, grading and erosion control on the one plan, Greg. They're small to read, but it talks about final subgrades and silt fences and all that. I have a mother who lives in the Fountains and has been driving through mud repeatedly to get to her parking garage, and it's been a mess over there. So I guess was part of my particular interest in this is, how are they dealing with the mess? They have some large piles of rock over there now that look like a makeshift way to fix it, but I'd like a little insight in what we're doing on grading, because frankly it looks like a mess over there.
I'm not aware of the mud issues. I know during a real heavy rain they have a problem there, but are you talking about all the time?
No, through the last couple heavy rains, mud washed into the parking garage at the Fountains, and there was mud everywhere, and the people couldn't park in the garage for several days. Now they've put up some kind of rocks and some type of barrier to help break the flow.
Well, I guess what I'll say, I'll check on it tomorrow.
Okay.
And see what we can do to make sure that, you know, that doesn't happen again.
Seems to be an issue, and it seems like a temporary fix, but I'd like to know that from a permanent development standpoint, that the grades are working and
holds. Well, the biggest permanent fix is to get it developed and get it ground covered.
Right, right. Oh, it's a sea of mud over there today. And if the developers here, maybe you can comment on the status of things today. So that was one. In the letter, Greg, it had reference from McClure. He is also requesting that the minimum side yard setback be revised to 5 feet on each side, with a sum of 15 feet. How would the sum of 15? Would some have to be 5 and some would have to be 10 that we would have gotten 15 before?
I think I defer that question to the engineer for the developer, as he's the one who originated the letter.
Okay. So I'm looking for clarification on the statement requesting that the minimum side yard setback be revised for lots 20 through 37 to 5 feet on each side instead of 5 feet with a sum of 15 feet.
He's looking at a sum of 10 feet, I think, but okay. He can clarify.
And I see him back here.
Yeah, I'm Mike Janicek with McClure Engineering, engineer on the project. Yeah, we're requesting a revision to the side yard. So the current zoning is a sum of 15 for the side yards. So you could have 5 on one side, but you'd have to have 10 on the other.
Okay.
We're requesting for it to be 5 foot minimum on both sides. So you could have as little as 10 foot. You could still have more, depending upon the lot, but
which
the minimum would be 5
out
on both sides. That's what we're requesting as part of the rezoning request.
Okay. Great. And then any comments on my questions about the drainage and the temporary barricades and things that are up there?
I think Dan is going to address that. Dan Dolan, the developer, he's going to come up here and talk about that. As soon as you've brought up your different questions, he'll address them.
Okay. Are there any on the part of the commission?
Yeah, I just have a question. Given that we can only have essentially 10 feet between buildings, how does the fire department feel about that? Sorry to put you on the spot.
Well, obviously, the closer a building is to another building, it's more of a concern for us.
Isn't that the reason why we have these minimum setbacks?
I would imagine that's part of it.
Yeah. How far? How close is too close? Okay.
Well, related to that, how close would the condos or the townhouses have been if it went townhouse? Would they be on 5 and 10 with a total of?
No, they would. Because when you only have one side yard, all you need to meet is the minimum side yard requirement of 5 foot. So if you remember, the attached condos have zero lot line on one side, so the other side just needs to be 5 foot. So traditionally, those have 10 foot of distance between them.
Okay, so same scenario then when I'm hearing, Paul. Yeah.
So, okay.
Okay.
Doesn't matter with option.
Okay. Anyone else from the commission? Seeing none. Anyone from the audience with regard to this case that would like to comment?
Good evening. My name is Greg Jaeger. I'm an attorney with the Pasternak firm, West 3rd Street in Davenport, here tonight on behalf of the developer, Town and Country, and Dan Dolan. I just wanted to address very briefly the PR zoning, because I think it is unusual. It's something that you approved for this same developer at the last meeting in the Glen Gevlin subdivision. In this particular case, with the ground already platted, it's the developer's intent to leave the density exactly the same as it shows today in the platting. In other words, you've got a total of 37 lots. You would have a total of 37 units. I would also point out that this application for rezoning is on the interior of the ground, so that I know that the commission received a letter of concern by a resident nearby earlier today. The neighbor would not be immediately adjacent to any of the ground that's subject to rezoning at this time. In other words, the outer lots, lots 1 through 19, are all owned also by the developer, and those are the lots that are immediately affected by this decision, not those on Joshua Street or further outside. I think I understand that the commission talked through the issue of the side yards. There was no objection raised by the fire department when this was brought through staff review. 10 foot as a total side yard clearance is something that the fire department is able to work through in the ordinary course of events. So it shouldn't be considered any kind of a fire hazard. Again, this is sort of a market-driven decision. Right now, currently, you could have the side-by-side houses, and it would be perfectly legal, and they could simply start doing that. But the market is saying it's better to have the houses physically separated. And again, the subdivision is going to be establishing a homeowners association. They're going to take care of the maintenance, the grass cutting, the snow removal, those kinds of things, so that basically the person who purchases the house simply doesn't share a common wall. And that's really what's going on here. As for the mud issue and the concern with the grading, I'd like to turn that over to Mr. Dolan to answer and address that. But if you have any questions about this, we're here to answer any of the questions or concerns that you might have. Thank you.
Ms. Green.
Dan Dolan, I'm the developer. The mud issue that we had after those major rainfalls, my erosion control vendor, we met and exceeded all the controls that were on the plan. We exceeded. We put triple. There was some extraordinary weather events, and they were breached, and mud did go in the basement, and I got a bill for it. This vendor has worked for Dial for 10 years. We had 6 inches of water in the basement. When Dial owned the property, they had 4 feet. So this isn't something that's new to Dial. They sold the land to me, and now it's my problem, and we're working through it. I put spent a lot of money, and we put in some barriers, and we reinforced everything. We had a pretty good event in the last week, and there was no complaints. So I think we've addressed that. Oh, yeah, and I'd like to take the opportunity to visit with Denny, and one of your staff was out there, and I think we put up a pretty double tough defense against problems in the future. But in my own defense, Dial flooded themselves about 6 times, but now it's me.
So that's a temporary, temporary solution. When it's grassed in and fully developed, you don't anticipate any of those flow issues, and those will be removed.
Exactly. Okay. And they're on lots, so they're berms where we're directing flow and retaining water. As vegetation comes on board and we get sod down, all those problems go away.
Well, they're definitely industrial strength looking. I can tell you that. So, nice job in the fix there. So thank you for that comment.
Yeah. Thank you. And then to the point, it would increase density. I put this project together to meet a need of an aging population. That's one of the fastest growing segments in our country. And what the market is telling me now, they want to be detached. So we could have more attached. I think from a fire safety issue, obviously if we're 10 feet apart with attached and 0 apart on the other side, there's an argument that that would make it worse. So I think this is a better solution. And the reason I've been successful is I listen to the market.
Okay, great. Thanks for the comments. Anyone else in the audience with regard to this case?
Mr. Chairman, I have an additional comment.
Yes.
The fire code does not actually even address separation distances between buildings, so there's nothing that I can enforce as far as the distance goes.
Okay, great.
Thank you. I'm satisfied. Thank you.
Yeah. I want to introduce at this point, too, for the record, that we did have, and it was referenced earlier, an email letter from Julie Kettman. 618 today, and in this letter she's expressing, and she lives at 5828 Joshua Street, backing up to the new subdivision as noted, and has concerns about the increased density of traffic coming in and out through the fountains, fire trucks and ambulances and things like that, and concerned about increasing traffic and density and the consistency with development for the adjoining neighborhood. So that'll be entered into the record as well. If we pass that down to Lisa, that'd be great. Any further questions there? No? Back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion that we approve case 14-047, the zoning classification rezoning, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 14-047. Subject to staff recommendations. Any discussions on the motion? I have one. Got to ask it myself, I guess, in that sense. But I would tend to agree. I take note with what Julie wrote in about the concern. I think Dan addressed it as far as the density. And just from my perspective for future developments in this type, I think it is important to keep the tighter, denser lots closer to, in this case, you know, multifamily with the fountains where it makes sense. You got a tradition, and then you've got a standard buffer to the adjoining properties that are comparably developed. So noted, good point, and I think this does address that from that standpoint. I would not be in favor of this had it been on the outer ring adjacent to the larger lot. So that would be my comment there.
Yeah, just to back that up, I agree with that. I think the way that it has transitioned from the single family R1 down to this smaller lot size is just classical, the way you would buffer the foundation. So I think it's good planning. I think it's, and I think the market-driven change here, I think, is a good thing. So.
Yep. Well stated. Okay, given any other comments? All those in favor of approving case 14-047, subject to staff recommendations, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 14-047 passes.
So, Mr. Chairman, I believe we also need a motion to approve case 14-054, subject to staff recommendations for the development plan.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? To approve case 14-054, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Case 14-054 passes. Okay, Greg.
We have two more cases that are joined here. One is rezoning, and the other is a preliminary plat for Spencer Hollow, first edition. Essentially, you have a land use primarily that is traditional residential throughout. You have a pure recreational conservation. You have zoning of R1 already in place, A1 here, R1, A1, and then A1 down here, and then R2 already over in this area. So you're looking at a mixture of residential type zonings. The petitioner would like to take and make this area R1. The concept he has offered, and this is north this direction, is for approximately 98 lots in what will be this overall subdivision. And what we're looking at tonight is essentially this area right here for the preliminary plat. Entry would be made through a widened opening here in Spring Creek Drive, and that would be the means to gain access to the remaining part of the subdivision and then also to the interior here. Preliminary plat being proposed shows, I believe, 34 lots that will be platted in the first stage of this development, again with a widened area here for right-of-way of 64 feet and a wider paving, I believe, as well. This is a version that is scaled at 1 to 150. The other was 1 to 200. And again, you have your means of access coming in here. Be a hammerhead to be required for turnaround in both these areas. And then you have entry, circulation of traffic in this first phase. Staff, in viewing the proposals for the rezoning and for the preliminary plat, recommended approval. I would ask you any questions.
Questions from the commission.
Greg, I do have one question. We only have the one entrance to the development. Is that sufficient for the remainder?
I defer that as a fire department code question, since it was the fire department that oversaw that decision.
So our fire chief had discussion with the developer, I believe, and others regarding this, and they had agreed to widen out the main entrance there. The first, was it 200 feet, however?
All the way to that first intersection.
To the first intersection, and then the rest of it, there's two different ways to go in, and he was satisfied with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Would you like to ask it?
I'll ask the question. help me understand these lots in the middle and the fact that we have two streets, or I guess it's one street, with the same name.
A lane and a drive,
but that just, it looks confusing to me.
And bootstrapping to that question, are the center lots, do they have two front yards or two backyards, or where's the front yard?
They would have two front yards, according to ordinance.
How are they addressed? How do they get address numbers?
Depends upon which way the house faces.
Could they go either way here, Bill?
I haven't had that discussion with the developer. I think that would be quite awkward, in my opinion, if it were to develop that way.
If they were to not all face the same direction?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We might have somebody addressing that question.
Good evening again. My name is Greg Jager. I'm an attorney with the Pasternak firm. I'm representing the developer here on this rezoning and on the preliminary plat. Nick Kramer, who is the representative of the developer, who was called out of town this evening and so is not available. I'm hoping that between myself and Mike Genesek, the engineer, we can answer any questions that you may have. As it relates to the question that's before the commission at the moment, yes, all the homes will face the same way. If you take I'm going to use the exhibit that's in front of you at the moment. The homes in the inner section
are all going to have front yards and entrances coming in from the west. So that's actually St. Anne Drive. They'll all be coming in off of St. Anne's.
And then, Bill, I just think about things that come up. For example, and maybe there's covenants, but fencing's only allowed in a rear yard. So these homes will have no rear yard, or will they?
They can. I mean, our ordinance does allow 4-foot fence to be on the property line. If you want to go higher than that, a 6-foot fence, you either need to get a variance or you need to be 10 foot in from the rear property line and have a planting every 20 foot. It is a little different when you have a double frontage or through lot as opposed to something that just has frontage on one side.
Okay. Another question, I know over the years we've had different discussions, and back to the drainage, there are drainage issues in town here and there. What would be, let me orientate myself here, the southeast corner of the development, right in that area? I know there's been some flooding water issues and brought up by the adjacent subdivision over the years. Is there anything special as part of this development that's being considered for drainage issues in there?
These are the areas that are being used for proposed as outlots, and where this begins to slope down like this and you do have adjoining properties, there actually is a drainage easement over on the Sterling Woods side, but there are two outlots, B and A, that are trying to address this issue, and we're looking at attempting to see where that water can be conveyed into an existing area that would permit it to be, you know, taken away, I guess, as it were. I'm trying to think. I can't remember the configuration for the storm sewer on that, though. It may be conveyed to whatever is out there, because you pretty much have, what, a ditch line, I believe.
I think the engineer probably, yeah.
And that's your reference to recommendation note 3, outlets used for stormwater may not outlet stormwater until the designs of such are addressed and approved by the city engineer. Greg, that easement you're talking about to the east, is that to the benefit of this property?
It's to the benefit of, it's listed here as an easement on Sterling Woods side, and because of the way this is configured, the water is naturally going to be inclined to go to that direction, as right. is on this side. So it's almost like a half of what, you know, might be over here, or else, I mean, there would be a means of maybe conveying through this lot here and a corner of that lot to this lot that water. But as right now, as the terrain is laid out right now, you do have a drop that goes this direction. I don't know if the finished grade is going to be like that, though. That's something the engineer would have to state.
And I see him back there.
Yeah, I'm Mike Janicek with McClure Engineering, the engineer on the project. And like Greg mentioned, each of those four outlots are for the purpose of detention. And we'll basically design detention ponds in those areas that would meet or exceed the city ordinance to slow those down. The water will be conveyed to where it currently runs. And basically, the detention ordinance will slow the water down to equivalent to or less than the flow rates that leave there now. So I believe it's stored at 100, store the 100-year storm and release it at the 2-year rate, I believe Bettner's ordinance currently is. So any large storm will actually result in less water than before, and any small storm will be equivalent or less than. So that's, if you have any other questions about that, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay, no, that addresses it. One further for me then, Greg. On the plan, and I'm looking at this one now, it shows the north portion. It looks like it's dotted in future. So is that more concept in the south portion? We're dealing with all of it tonight,
this is,
right?
For this portion up here, this will come later as a preliminary plat.
But are we rezoning that?
You are rezoning this portion right
and
here.
That's just a concept then,
yes,
of what they've got for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else on the commission? Anyone in the audience with regard? Yes, sir. Well, look, you know, just let me finish Greg for a minute, and then we'll have you right after Greg.
Okay. Just a couple of quick points on the rezoning. When we first started talking about this project, there was some concern as to how much ground had actually already been rezoned to R1. The developer owns the balance of the ground out, but we wanted to get the preliminary plat in front of the commission. So we decided at that first meeting that we would go ahead and rezone the rest of the property. So as it turns out, once we did the surveying, there is sufficient R1 zoning in place that we would not have had to do that, but we'd already made the decision to go forward, and that's what we're doing. We don't anticipate developing much beyond what is shown in the preliminary plat, and the reason for that is sanitary sewer. Sanitary sewer does not extend in such direction or capacity as would allow the development of the balance of the ground at this time. Now, the city's five-year plan does have in it substantial funds to start the extension of sanitary sewer, in part because they're trying to develop I-80 and Middle. And if something pops at I-80 and Middle, then sanitary sewer becomes a much higher priority for the city. But within, say, the next 7 years, at the end of 7 years, it's anticipated that the sanitary sewer will be in and will be functional, and at that point the developer would be in a position to develop the balance of the ground. So what you're seeing tonight in the preliminary plat is really about all that's going to be done for the immediate future. Just to follow up on the concern with stormwater detention and also the extension of Lancaster, what we heard from the neighbors, two points. We didn't want to have the subdivision connect to the existing Sterling Woods subdivision. So we worked hard to figure out a way to accommodate that, and we did it by, in essence, widening the entranceway, because there was a concern about multiple entrance points. And by widening the entranceway, substantially more than you would normally see, hopefully that addresses the concern and still allows the Sterling Woods subdivision the privacy that it seeks. On the stormwater detention, you've heard from the engineer. We know it's a concern. We know the engineering staff is going to be watching very closely on that. We want to make sure that the problem is reduced by the development, that it is not increased by the development. If there's anything else that we can answer, we are glad to do that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
My name's Stan Roberts. I live in Sterling Woods. My backyard abuts this new development. I'm pleased that Lancaster isn't going through. I'm sort of dismayed at the number of houses that are going there. But my main concern was the storm water runoff. We have had, in the north end of my yard, we have a drainage culvert that's probably 3 foot in diameter, and over the years I've occasionally seen it run completely full. So we've done a number of different landscaping jobs over the years to try and deal with it, and I think we've got it sort of figured out. But with all these lots, I'm assuming there'll be more runoff because we're used to seeing either corn or beans back there. How that's going to be managed, and if there's any way that they can divert it somewhere other than our backyards. So,
Stan, which property is yours?
I'm the second one in on the left.
Foster's, and then
Foster's,
you're next to Foster's.
Next to them, okay. Yeah. So the water runs through my backyard, through the Foster's backyard as well, and then underneath Lancaster, and then back down into the creek.
I think we've touched on it a little bit in some of our discussions, and their description from the engineer about the fact that they would be engineering the water to be detained until it was detained to the point it would not exceed the current flow rates. But what I'm hearing you say is that the current flow rates can occasionally be an issue as well.
It can. Yeah, it can be, 10 to 15 feet wide across our backyards, you know, if we get a gully washer. You know, we sort of tolerated it because the farm was there first, but now that there's maybe some way to mitigate this, it would be nice if, you know, we could have some improvement.
And it sounds like the engineers conceptually headed that direction, and city and engineering is going to work and approve a adequate plan, but I'll let them address that.
Yeah, at the present time, we haven't got a plan.
Right.
Essentially, with a preliminary plat, the engineer is supposed to submit preliminary plans, and the only thing I have at this point are street grades. So at this point, I can't really speak to it. One of the things that may be a possibility is to have an over and under system for this upper end area. In other words, a smaller storm sewer conveying the two-year storm, which is the release rate of the detention basins, and then the remainder would go over overland. I mean, that's a possibility. But at this time, we haven't really looked at it.
So you were supposed to have gotten some calculations and information with this, and you haven't gotten it yet?
We haven't got a full detailed set of preliminary plans, no.
So what I'm hearing is that we're not at a point where they've gotten any kind of information, and they're yet to engineer it correctly, but maybe the engineer can address where they're headed with that data that might be missing at this point.
The city ordinance doesn't really, this is Mike Janicek with McClure again. City ordinance really doesn't address the requirements for the preliminary plan. So, and I think we're kind of a guinea pig here where the city just changed their, they just sent out a memo requiring preliminary plans with a preliminary plat. We're probably like the first set of plans that's ever turned in preliminary plans. So we did our best to provide preliminary plans. I don't think there's anything in the ordinance that really tells us what's required for those. So we did our best to provide what we had. We'll typically, we don't get into extreme detail in engineering plans until after the preliminary plat's been approved because of risk to the developer. If you really, we normally don't like to do a large amount of design until the preliminary plat's been approved, so we know that roadways aren't going to totally change and street grades aren't going to totally change. So we try to minimize the amount of preliminary work until after those approvals. Then at that point, we do all the final design. So I think all of Denny's questions will be answered once the preliminary plat's been approved and we proceed with final design and final platting.
Okay. Greg, did you have additional then, too?
I was aware from Mr. Janicek that the city was trying to get more information at the preliminary plat stage. I thought I had made a call and asked if there were any issues, and I was under the understanding that everything was okay. Happy to have the engineer for the developer meet with Denny and talk this out. If the commission wants to add a condition that more detailed stormwater runoff calculations or directions be provided before it goes to the city council, we're glad to do that. The neighborhood has a concern. We want to address the concern, make sure everything is fine. If we work with staff on that before it gets to the council, so that when it gets to the council, the folks have some understanding that it's being looked at and addressed, we're happy to do that.
Thanks, Greg. Bill?
Not to beat this horse to death, but Director of Public Works and I, approximately 3-4 weeks ago, sent out a letter to all the developers and the engineering firms saying that we'd like to have more information at the preliminary platting time. We also stated that anything that was in the works at this point in time was not subject to that. This is one of those things that was in the works at the time. So going forward, we should have better information on these preliminary plats at the time they come before the commission.
Well, and I'm encouraged by the discussion too, just working, because that's the key, because I know there's a known drainage issue out there, and now's the time to deal with it before we get approved and developed. So great, thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Marlena Hammonds-Ehlers, and I have a question that I need to be educated on by the engineers, and it's the difference between a detention pond and a retention pond.
And Marlena, are you an adjacent owner? I didn't catch. Okay, thanks.
I don't know if Danny wants to address that or if I should, but.
Well, basically a detention basin is dry all the time. A retention basin is wet all the time. In other words, it's a pond of water. and the detention in a retention basin is above that normal level.
Right, retention is expecting to have infiltration, where detention, yeah, it's going to 99% of the time detention is going to be dry, just what Denny said.
And as I understand it, for the drainage, we were talking about detention areas?
Yes.
Okay, because I had talked earlier today with one of the other neighbors in the area, and he had property adjacent to the Windmiller development that's on the south side of Forest Grove, and there were some drainage issues, and there were retention ponds where the water was stayed, you know, in the pond. But as people bought the lots, and the people, it's my understanding, and I don't know, it's hearsay from the neighbor, that it was, they bought the lots knowing that there was a retention pond on them, but later on the developer chose to fill in those retention ponds, and it has altered the way that water drains from the area, and now it has rendered part of this other landowner's land. He's having a real issue with it, and it's a real problem. And so I was just trying to clarify if these are going to be retention or detention, and if there's any retention, which I didn't hear, would that be, you know, would people be filling them in? And
no retention.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else from the audience? Yes, ma'am. Please.
Hi, my name is Barbara Anderson, and our family owns the property north of Sterling Woods, and I wanted just to make a comment again about the drainage. I was out yesterday. There's an area just north of Sterling Woods. Since that neighborhood was built, the storm water that passes has really carved out an area. I don't know if you'd call it a gully that leads to Spencer Creek. It used to be a pretty shallow area where you could just step across or drive across. And now it's about 12 to 13 feet wide and about 8 to 9 feet deep. So I would just encourage the city and the developer, as they're looking at water drainage, to maybe avoid funneling it into one area, because it seems that that's kind of what's happened with the Sterling Woods development. And that's only a handful of homes compared to the new development that's, you know, going to be coming in. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Barbara. Anyone else in the audience?
Sorry, I have another question, and it pertains to sidewalks that might be on Forest Grove Road for this development, because with the Windmiller development that was done on the south side, there was a real issue. My husband said, you know, he was having difficulty, and he mentioned it at the time that area was developed, that there were no sidewalks and how easy it was to almost run over people that were running or walking up and down Forest Grove. And that's been a number of years ago, and no sidewalks by the city have been put in that area. And those homes appear to be more densely packed than the Windmiller development on the south side. And I guess my question and my concern is, will there be any sidewalks put in by the city of Bettendorf to alleviate all the pedestrian traffic that might come from there? I think it's a safety issue, too.
If I may.
Please.
Typically, we don't put sidewalks in a Seal-Colt street, because eventually Forest Grove is going to be paved, and with the paving will come the sidewalks. It's pretty much the same thing as we did with Hopewell if you recall. Hopewell had, was a seal coat street. It had no sidewalks, and we came in and paved that roadway and put in the sidewalks and the trail.
And Forest Grove will be?
Forest Grove will eventually be paved, yes.
And when will, what is, what time frame are we looking at?
I couldn't answer that. It's going to be in the future.
There's a longer-term plan that has Forest Grove on the Davenport side, and there's funding issues relative to that and the completion of their portion, then our portion from Middle Road or somewhere west of there, I guess, to the east, then that's part of a longer-range development plan for part of the roadway system in Bettendorf. So it's one of those things that eventually will come, but there's no current timetable or key funding for it.
At the present time, there's not, but Forest Grove from Davenport, from Utica Ridge Road, almost to Middle Road is going to be completed hopefully next year. What we do in the future, and this, that was federally funded too, a good portion of that. It depends on how much federal funds are available, and it depends on how much city funds are available as to when that's going to take place. But it's going to be development driven as well.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else from the audience in regard? Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is James Leistra, and I own a home across the street, across Forest Grove. And I was just wondering if the representative of the builder could maybe just quickly speak to the timeline and the price point of this neighborhood? Like,
Craig's going to address that.
When I realized Mr. Kramer was not going to be here this evening, I asked that very question. He indicates that once all the approvals are given, he would like to start putting in the initial portion of the roadway as soon as possible. He anticipates having three or four different builders who would be the preferred builders for the subdivision. He is not the developer slash builder, such as you saw with the last item. He indicates that they anticipate ranch-style houses with a price point starting at $350,000 apiece.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else from the audience? Seeing none, I would return to the commission. Oh, council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to point out the diagram to the bottom right of your screen that talks about a property swap detail. The city has actually signed off as a co-applicant of this because currently part of the ground is owned by the city. It's part of the Forest Grove Park ground. The land swap agreement is scheduled to go before the city council at the first meeting in July. So this preliminary plat is subject to that approval by the city council.
Okay. I actually thought about that earlier, and I saw the note. It does adjoin the park. And I know I worked in that steering committee, and we had a development plan for the park. Is that being looked at as the concept plan for the park and how we adjoin here? Because as I was thinking about that, that road,
right,
how we're going to adjoin the park property there.
This would actually be the park access road as well. So
okay.
That's what the land swap
gotcha.
Sort of,
okay.
The whole idea behind
great.
It.
Great, because I knew we had an entrance somewhere right. over there.
And
all right.
I believe the reasoning behind it was it better aligns with the roadway on the opposite
side
of Forest Grove.
Great, okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I might just add one other point to that, Christine has done a good job of alerting it to the commission. You don't need to add a condition to the approval should you approve it, because our agreement with the city is if the land swap agreement doesn't go forward, the city simply withdraws its permission for the preliminary plat, and then the matter dies at that point.
Okay. Last call on this one? Okay. From the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to make a motion.
You are my motion lady tonight. Thank you.
Case number 14-048, rezoning request, subject to staff recommendations. I recommend for approval.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 14-048, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 14-048 passes.
Then I will also move that we approve case 14-049, the preliminary plat, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second that also.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 14-049, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Okay, great. Greg.
The next item before the Planning and Zoning Commission is Hopewell Hills 4th Edition, and it's basically this area right here that was one time Highlands East 1st Edition. This is the preliminary plat, and this is the area, the lots involved right here. This is what was originally platted, the area outlined in red, and there hasn't really been much substantial change. We were waiting on a study to be completed, and that was regarding a drainage issue, and that has been since completed. The study has also recommended that there be modifications by a larger pipe being placed within the existing system to collect stormwater and to make sure that that stormwater doesn't pose any drainage issue problem, and also the proper easements have been added to the final plat to incorporate that design. Staff in reviewing this particular final plat recommended approval. I would ask, are there any questions?
Any questions on the part of the commission? Seeing none, are there any folks in the audience in regard to this case? Seeing none, I would return to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move we approve case number 14-012, Hopewell Hills 4th Edition, the final plat, subject to staff recommendations.
All right, we have a motion and a second to approve case 14-012, Hopewell Hills 4th Edition, final plat, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 14-012 passes. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I believe we skipped the preliminary plat case 14-008 for Miller Holdings First Edition.
We did. And I kept looking for...
And we do not have the... Do we? Nope, we don't have the attachments in here for that one.
Do you want to put it on the screen?
I'm going to see if I can go to the, here we go. I can get back to something here.
Must have been, Bill, that you saw me fumbling for my paper because we were out of order and I couldn't find it, so.
Yeah, shoot. Have to go for the overhead on that. This essentially is the area right here. It used to be Keefe's Edition, plot number 2 for that overhead. And I'll put the next slide up.
With the old-fashioned way with paper,
go
okay.
Right to the preliminary plat on this. Okay. Essentially, what we're looking at is reshaping of this area, and at present, there's a great deal of fill that is located that will be removed. And what we're looking at essentially is a very large accommodation area, 3 lots for what are going to be industrial buildings. And I believe there will be a spec building that's already proposed. As part of this design, Marathon Court will be 38 feet wide paved. There's already 60 feet worth of right-of-way designated, and this street will be paved to the requirements of an industrial street, so that it'll support the weight of the vehicles that are going in to this locale. The area here that's involved also dedication of right-of-way from Valley made by the developer. This dedication will allow then there to be a uniformity in the right-of-way that is found here, and then that extra amount, I believe 40 feet, will be taken from the Keefe's addition plat, lot number 2. Stormwater detention will be down here, and it will be up to the engineer to show us that the entirety of that stormwater system will work for this site. Also, we want to see remediated these areas right here. We want to make sure that these drainage way areas are effective and that the they are cleaned up so that they will act in a more efficient manner. Staff, in looking at this proposal, recommends approval. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions from the commission. I'd have one backing up just to what you just described. If we've got an existing issue with the drainage system or ditches that are there now, is the ongoing maintenance and keeping open of them going to be required on the plat?
That will be something that our engineer working with the Townsend engineering firm will address, to make sure that those areas, you can put a condition on that if you want, to make sure that those areas are kept in the state that are they're designed to be kept in, essentially, with the grading
That's
and
where
other
I'm going.
Engineering plans that are submitted.
Yep. Any other questions on the part of the commission? This is the one I asked you the question about. What is the LOMR?
Okay, yeah, that's essentially, I'll defer to the man right here.
It's a letter of map revision.
Okay.
They received years and years ago a certificate of elevation, or I'm sorry, they received a flood zone development permit to add fill to the area. And the permit specifies the type of fill, the compaction,
elevation,
the height that it will be filled to. And then once they have completed that, they can file paperwork with FEMA for a letter of map revision. This whole area originally was in the 100-year flood zone. The conditional letter states that this is what we're going to do and we're proceeding with the project. Eventually, they will file for the final removal letter. And once that has occurred, this area will be officially no longer
floodplain. Great. Okay. Anything else in the commission? Yeah. I see somebody's at the podium. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, my name is Kathy Musel, and I live on Valley Drive, 7180 Valley Drive, which is right across from this. And now, I have two questions, actually. One, are you letting them have access from Valley Drive into there, or is there only access from State Street?
Only access from State.
Okay. And are they going to have to build some kind of, like, foliage barrier or something like that?
Yes, there'll be a landscape barrier here that will be required.
Okay, so these are just going to be big buildings that'll be out there, and that's basically what I'll be looking at, foliage and big buildings.
When you say foliage, are you talking, and then Greg, for clarity,
within the landscape ordinance requirement, because this area here, I believe, is zoned R1 right here, and then you have this area right here, which is I2. You have a requirement of a certain number of feet of separation of a landscape barrier being planted in this area. And that's something that when the site plan comes forward for for this, we'd have to decide at what point we want this staged in. Do we want it when this lot maybe gets developed, or wait for this? Because typically we've had other instances of development that when it initially starts, we've staged this in at different levels. So we'll have to make a determination at that time when the site plan comes to us for one of these lots.
Is this currently in crop?
No. No, this is...
No,
this
they
is,
didn't get planted,
didn't
but,
get
it,
planted
it has
but it
been
was.
Until
it
this
been.
Year, yes.
Yeah. And that won't necessarily be a berm, but just a landscaped area of a certain dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And you said they're going to raise the land up?
It's already been raised.
Well, we have to see exactly what is occurring there, and we'll have to make sure that that it is correctly... the soil that goes to site correctly compacted, that it's at that proper level so it does meet the floodplain requirements.
It will be raised at least 1 foot above the base flood elevation.
Okay, because
it's low right now.
Yeah, we know it's low. We've lived there for 28 years and I've never seen it flood.
Yeah,
so
we don't have the ability to issue any type of permits for buildings to go in there until they've certified that it's above the flood level.
But what I couldn't quite hear clearly is what type of business is going to go in there, or is that still open?
What's proposed to go on lot one is a speculative building, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000 square feet. So if you're familiar with some of the buildings that are down in the industrial park, Grafco and the two Greystone buildings, going to be similar buildings to that, and my guess probably some sort of a similar tenant.
Okay.
And their type of businesses that are going to operate during normal business hours, are they going to be around the clock?
Until somebody actually comes in and bites on the property, I don't think we'll actually know. So.
Just as long as they're not like the cement plant down the road.
They run till all hours of the night making all kinds of noise. They're not supposed to be, but they are.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the audience in regard to this case? See.
Somebody. Or maybe not.
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Cindy Bodden, and I own the property just adjacent. And I know that there have been runoff issues. I'm just curious about the drainage between the two properties and what would be required. What do we know?
Hi, Chris Townsend with Townsend Engineering. And we actually did provide full calculations, full plans for this preliminary plat, trying to follow the rules right away on this. New thing.
So gold star.
Do we get some extra credit
gold
for this?
Star.
Thank you.
The gold star in his plans,
yeah.
Bill.
Thank you. But you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. So this site has actually a detention along Highway 67, and then there's a long narrow detention for those other two lots kind of on the bottom left corner of the screen there. And that has been designed for the maximum impervious surface that these properties can have. So that covers, that's 60%. So say it's 60% roofs, paving, you know, parking. So that's maximum. That's all you can have anyway. So that's what those have been designed for, and those will be, you know, tweaked out for the actual, during the actual site plan process. So that'll take care of the lots themselves. Well, this being raised up so high out of the floodplain, obviously you can't collect all of the water off from the site. So the water that does actually, I think it was almost 5 acres that could not be captured in detention, that amount with the 100-year storm event has actually been taken out of the release rate for the other detentions. So those detentions are made bigger, essentially, to accommodate for that water. Now, that doesn't answer your question.
Well, I mean,
yeah, so the question really is between the lots is that, so we've actually calculated what it will take for the drainage that needs to go through those easements that we created to make sure that that water can run through like it has been. And really what should happen here, theoretically, is that this, with these detention basins, that should reduce the amount of water going into those ditches, which should help.
Okay.
And if I can just add, I know part of the issue has been the development on Monk's Road, which has then come onto my land and then onto your land. And is there still a plan to continue Monks Road to the highway? Has there been any more conversation?
No, not at this time.
Ma'am, there's no immediate plan. Okay. We're still looking at it, though.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience? Yes, sir.
My name is Harold Jones. I live on Valley Drive. First of all, what can anybody tell me what, in relation to the floodplain, the 100-year floodplain, what Valley Drive actually is?
You mean an elevation?
An elevation. You mentioned that the it would be built up about a foot, and I'm taking that being above Valley Drive. So that's just a curious question.
Yeah, in looking at the floodplain maps, it depends upon where you're at on Valley Drive as to where the floodplain elevation is in relationship to Valley Drive. There's a few spots that it's over Valley Drive. Most spots, it's on both sides of Valley Drive. But if you'd like to stop by the offices, we'd be happy to show you the floodplain maps and show you how that all lays out.
Okay. And the other part of my question is, water drainage is coming off of the Valley Drive side of the addition. That will be controlled. You will not allow it to run across Valley Drive?
No. No, that water is, it goes to State Street now, and it will continue to do that.
It'll continue to go along
South
Valley Drive
to State
down
Street.
To that creek that's supposedly down
correct.
There?
That's correct.
And that's going to be maintained, I presume?
It's going to be maintained by the owners here.
By the owners?
Right.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Harold, just for clarity, the one thing you said about 1 foot, what I heard John say about 1 foot was the site would be raised to 1 foot above flood elevation. That's the 1 foot you were probably hearing.
Okay. Well, what I'm seeing now when I look across the street there, it looks like your elevation is probably 6 or 8 foot above Valley Drive at the time.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Sure.
The requirement for removal from the flood zone is that it be elevated to 1 foot above base flood elevation. Many people are under the impression that if they raise the ground 10 feet, it's going to displace a lot more water than if they raise it 1 foot. Once you have raised it above the base flood elevation, it does not matter how much higher you go beyond that point. It will no longer displace water.
Yeah.
So when I said they're required to raise it to 1 foot above the base flood elevation, that is the requirement for the engineer to file and get the property removed and the conditional loamer made final. But they could raise it more than that.
I'm not concerned about that. The concern is it's going to be above Valley Drive, I'm sure of that, in my mind. And I was concerned about the water just coming backwards off of that addition.
No. We won't allow them to backpedal water on you.
Right, and I could maybe Chris. Clarify a couple things.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, okay, sir. Yeah, and that's a good point. Right now, when you look at this site, it's a little deceiving. There's areas, and if you could read all those lines on there, you know, it's a small drawing to read them all. There are some locations where we're 10 feet above where we will be here at the end. They're going to be moving that dirt around, maybe moving some off site. It's just how it's been placed on there temporarily. So it is a little deceiving. And then also, you know, that all the water will go, or some of the water will go into the detention, that long, narrow detention, be released into that draw or ditch on the west side and the south side there, and that's actually been increased. It's pretty good size. It's hard to tell, but those, where it looks like a big thick line, those are, that's a slope going down to that ditch, and that's actually been widened, you know, from when it was, so that we could maintain a good, nice flow and make sure we can get down to Highway 67 to the big culvert where it goes across the road. So they will maintain that, and that's what we were talking about earlier about adding a note probably to the final plat, saying they'll maintain the drainage easements.
Yes, sir.
My name is David Musel. I live at 7180, and I think the area that he's referring to, concerned about, is at 7132, which is right in line with that creek. And you, when you redid Valley Drive, you overhauled the culvert and everything. But when we get heavy rain now, and it doesn't have to be a 100-year rain, Valley Drive does go under right there at 7132. It gets anywhere from 6 to 8 inches of water over Valley Drive already. So I think he's probably concerned about that, raising this property here to the south up, is that going to exacerbate the water over top of Valley Drive now at around 7132 where the culvert goes under the road? Yeah, it, right where it starts to make an angle,
yeah.
And there's a,
right.
They redid the culvert and went under the road, but okay. Water still gets over top of Valley Drive on a heavy rain. It's a little better now, but you were concerned about if this was going to be elevated up, if that was going to exacerbate that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Part of what the engineer has to certify on the floodplain development permit is that the fill will not adversely affect people upstream or downstream from the fill.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Josh Nelson, I live on Valley Drive too, and I'm a little out of my depth, but the only question I had, this land is already zoned I-2, correct? And I live right across the street. My only concern, and they've kind of brought it up, involved the types of businesses and their working hours. And I don't even know if this is the right, I mean, is there an ordinance in terms of when they can operate and things like that? And if so, when that, so that I'm not, somebody's not working at midnight when right across the street.
Yep. Yeah. Bill?
There is not really an ordinance in the industrial zone, but there are performance standards that have noise levels, dust levels, those types of things that they have to meet. And that's one thing when they come through the site development plan or a person comes in and decides to locate in the building, that we take a look at and make sure they're within those parameters of the ordinance.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Anyone else from the audience with regard to this case? Seeing none, I'll return to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we approve case 1408, Miller Holdings First Edition, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve case 14008, Miller Holdings First Edition, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Okay, Greg.
The next case involves a case that we've already reviewed, but there's been additional land added subsequent to the last time we visited the Wendy's second edition, and then also this revised site plan. The area I've circled here is the 218 feet by 20 feet has been added to place a retaining wall in. And if you drove past there today, you can see that they're putting that wall in, and that's the first thing they're doing before they start the construction. This is the area that's being added additionally, and today they're filling this whole area in, constructing that retaining wall so as to help with some drainage issues affecting the church over here. The site, the building now has been removed, trees removed here so that there's access, the new access is placed in, and what we had before was this plat here presented to you, and it has not been recorded yet. So what the developer did is waited and then added the additional area down here to the existing plat. So you have that issue before you as a final plat, and then this was the initial site plan showing the entryways, but not yet showing over in this area the additional spacing of this addition right here. So essentially, this is where the retaining wall will be placed. These are the two issues before you, and staff recommends approval for both the final plat and the site development plan. I would ask, are there any questions?
Did it change the parking, any of that layout, or just merely?
I think that was already addressed.
It does add parking this on the south side.
Yeah.
Anyone else in the commission? Anyone in the audience with with regard to this case? Seeing none, back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we approve case number 14-050, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve case 14-050, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. 14-050 is passed. Thanks.
And I will also move that we approve case number 14-051, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second to approve case 14-051, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. 14-051 is approved.
Mr. Chairman, we have a somewhat substantial modification being made to our existing Isle of Capri site, and the area outlined in green shows pretty much the entire courtyard being filled in with what will be a new on-site gaming operation that will take the gaming operations on, it'll be a land-based casino, essentially, is what you're going to be seeing. The boat right here, and this is the means of getting over 17th Street, and then you still have the circulation around here. There'll be a gate placed here, though, as the parking in this area will be somewhat, I guess, set up for reserve-type parking in a portion, maybe, of this structure here. This will also be removed, the current entryway into the south tower. This whole area here will be removed, and you can see it down here as well. The gate will be placed over in this direction, over toward this area right here. That'll be one modification. The entire build-out area, and this is looking from the bridge, is essentially this whole area right here. So that'll be all totally filled in, and you're looking at it with the southern view here. Everything that you see here that is open at this time will be enclosed from this level and then all the way down to this entirety of the courtyard. This is the plat, essentially, that is the space for this, the legal description, as it were, that will be used for the site. This was the original plan. This is the outline of the building within the original plan that was submitted back in the 1990s, and then this area here will be somewhat of a drive access that will be a portion of that. This is the demolition plan showing the area that will be removed, the structure that will be removed, and then all of the interior and how that will be excavated, and then all the utilities, the removal of them. This is the grading plan, essentially showing again the outline of the gaming operation, and then here will be a new access into that area, and this is the parking over here with the gate, I believe, being added approximately in this area. And this is the utility plan showing the outline again of the build-out area. And then again, access into it. Staff, in reviewing this proposal, recommended approval. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions from the commission?
I'm just trying to understand, Greg. So basically, it's built out from the hotel to the retail space. That's totally enclosed. And then it actually goes over to where the parking structure is. Is that correct?
Doesn't quite attach with the parking structure.
Doesn't quite attach. Yeah, that area right there, I'm not sure what that space is right there.
The parking building is right here.
Yeah, but the part that you circled before, what is?
There's an entryway of some sort, I believe, right here or nearby.
What are you pointing
this,
at?
This portion here.
That's what's confusing to me, because that portion that you just circled is labeled as the entryway, but down in the lower left corner, you noted that as a like a drive-in entry.
This is where the drive comes through, and this is not impacting that access to this area.
People will come in, and you see this island here.
Mm-hmm.
People will come in, drop off under this canopy, this being the outside of the building, and then proceed out.
Okay, so that's
this
a
is,
that's
this
still
is going
a drive.
To be restricted because they want to reserve this portion of the lower level of the parking ramp for parking, the valet type parking only. So this does attach all the way around to the existing banquet facility.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some equipment in here, cooling towers for the existing hotel, and to have access to these rooms, fire department needed some separation here. So this comes, am I right, San Steve, about 60 foot away, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
So this area that you just drew, Bill, that's an access point, but it's not the public entry.
But it's
entry
more of
a access.
Service.
This is
the public entrance.
Okay. Yeah.
If you come in and you want to check into either the hotels or go to the banquet facility or go to the casino or get something to eat, it's all going to be taken care of in this one big master lobby.
Okay. That makes sense.
And the additional building space were covered with parking requirements at this point with the existing structure and
basically,
everything?
We consider it a wash. They've got plenty of room for parking expansion off to the east if they need it, but we basically consider it a wash. Square footage of the boat compared to the square footage of this, what little bit of parking they had inside that little courtyard area.
Okay, I didn't really even look at it that way, but so the square footage of the boat in your perspective was building, and we're getting the same amount of building, I mean, even though it was sitting in the water. So from a parking requirement standpoint, I'm with you. Okay.
Is there going to be some kind of a parking plan during construction? I assume the boat's going to remain open while this is being built. So you're going to have...
We've kind of had some preliminary discussions with the owners and the builders about that, but we don't even have a full set of plans yet, so that'll be things that'll come as we progress through the process.
Okay.
Bill, would the timing of this be such that it would be completed before we got into the really heavy duty construction of the new bridge?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The indication from the general contractor is they want to start as soon as they get the approvals from the city.
Okay.
Anyone in the audience with regard to this case? Yes, sir.
Greg Gackle, 1116 Cofeld Avenue. I just had a question about the existing boat and the temporary employee entrance. It's been there for, 20 years? Is there any requirement to remove the boat and or that other building on the levee subsequent to this being completed?
My understanding is the boat is going to go south.
Just cut it loose.
The building that's currently on the jetty, probably not much use for it once the boat goes.
Literally.
My guess.
Just a little levity up here. There's just cut it loose and let it float down, but we don't think that's going to happen. Come on, pull it together. We're almost done here, so... Yep.
Getting punchy.
All right. Anyone else in the audience with regard to this case? Anything from the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case 14052, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to approve case 14052, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Okay. What do we got next, Greg?
That it?
Update?
That's it. Commissioner update.
Okay, Bill, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I had a 25-minute presentation planned for tonight, but
can't you make it an hour? The pizza's about here.
Mr. Chairman, I move we
adjourn
the next commission.
Subsequent to your last meeting, you had recommended approval of the Rad Panda rezoning on 53rd Avenue from A1 to R5. The City Council had the public hearing and first reading and did follow your lead. Highland 7th edition preliminary and final plat, that was the Greg Franich north of 53rd, was approved by the City Council, and the final plat of Haley Heights 3rd edition was approved. Just very briefly, we do have some focus groups scheduled for Monday and Tuesday of the coming week. Lisa's been a champ. I think we invited between 75 and 100 people to those focus groups, seven or eight different groups over 2 days. We are planning on having a steering committee meeting at 5 o'clock on Monday. So we'll see where it goes from there. My understanding is the survey that was sent out to everybody on the steering committee was very well received, and we'll see the results of those also on Monday.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you for your efforts. Thank you, Commission, for this evening. I will take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Ooh. Okay, we're adjourned. Thanks.